What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Luke Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. How you doing? If you want to connect with the show, you can do so through the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You'll find links to social media and things like that. You can also email me, and you can buy the book if you'd like, the digital version at least. So this episode, I want to get into the visible hand of crony capitalism. My God, is it not rampant in the United States? It has turned into the way business is done. It's an embarrassment, of course, but it is a fact of life. And I think people that take a look at the way the economy runs, the way that the marketplaces are supposed to work, but actually, you know, how they really work as opposed to how they're supposed to work, and you know, the corporate giveaways and the things like that. There's no conclusion you can come to other than this is a form of crony capitalism that has taken over the United States and it's not limited to the United States, of course, but it is now the main way that the United States does business. You go through, you know, you see Wall Street giveaways in 2008 with the crash and then Wall Street, you know, threatening to, you know, that there'll be martial law on Monday morning if they don't get $700 billion in TARP money from the federal government. And then you've got the Federal Reserve loaning out $16 trillion right around the corner to any bank that needs it, foreign bank, didn't matter. So you see that the sorts of offers that are there for some people do not apply to other people, to other corporations, to other industries. You know, if you're a banker, if you're Jamie Dimon or Lloyd Blankfein, now he's not the CEO of Goldman anymore, but he was for a long, long time. You have access. I mean, it's almost like, why do your job? Why bother actually making money at Goldman Sachs? You can just always ask the government for more money and they'll give it to you. You can ask the Fed for more money. They'll loan it to you at, you know, 0.25% interest rate. And then you can take that and make, you know, make crazy investments or even very risk adverse loans and still make a fortune on that if you're getting the money for next to nothing. So the world now runs with this form of crony capitalism. It has become baked into the system, and it is defined as an economy in which businesses thrive not as a result of risks they take, but rather as a return on money amassed through a nexus between a business class and the political class. It's a fancy word. It's a fancy term for saying crony capitalism is an economy where people in business that are connected to powerful politicians get rewarded and have the risk taken out of it. They privatize the gains and socialize the losses. Meaning if they make money, they keep the money for themselves. Thank you very much. My stock goes up a couple points. I get a big bonus and all that stuff. If we lose money, then we socialize the losses, meaning we go to the government and we say, oh, you know, we need help. And if, because if our company falls apart or if our industry falls apart, well, then, you know, it's going to have a cascading effect. And since everything is interconnected in this globalism scam, then really, if you take us down, we're going to take everything else down. And you can't have that, right? You're a politician that needs people to like you and think you're doing a good job. And if we've collapsed on your watch, then it's an indictment on you and you don't get reelected. So therefore, they give away billions of dollars to people. We see this now during the coronavirus situation where, you know, I mean, every fucking business in the world is lining up for a handout. Some crazy ones, ones that have nothing to do with anything are like, hey, we need money, you know? And there's a aspect of that where you kind of say, I don't really blame you. You're going to go up there and you're going to ask for money from the government. If they're dumb enough or willing enough to give you that money, you're going to take it. I don't love that strategy. I don't think it's a respectable one, but I certainly understand why companies do it, why industries do it. So, you know, like as a regular person, you pay into, through your taxes and everything, you pay into unemployment. And then when you get laid off, or if you get laid off or fired or something like that, you can collect unemployment. And people will say, oh, how dare you collect unemployment? You're like, hang on a second. I paid for this. You know, I've been paying for this for years and years and years. Out of every paycheck, a little bit goes to that. So I'm entitled to this. Now, that's one thing. That's a different version. That's not what's happening here. That is not what's happening here at all. What you're seeing with this crony capitalism model is that it's not what you've earned. It's not about I deserve this or I've earned this. It's about what you can get. It doesn't even matter if you've legitimately need the handout or if you need this contract that the government's giving out. If you've got the connections, you get it. And I'm not even really faulting people for that either, because in life, in business, in social situations, it's who you know. It happens all the time. If you know a lot of powerful people, you don't even have to ask them for things. If you just know a lot of powerful people, sometimes opportunities will come your way because of the people that you know. And there's nothing wrong with taking that opportunity. In fact, you'd be stupid to not take the opportunity, provided that it's legal and, you know, they're not asking you to do something that'll get you in a lot of trouble. But if you're just leveraging the fact that you know a lot of well-connected people, that's a good thing. But that's gotten out of control now. And it's created almost like a two-tiered system of society where there's just the mega, mega wealthy and well-connected at the top, and then everybody else in some form below them. And it's created a bit of a problem within society. And this is, you know, this crony capitalism concept has been basically like the mission statement of the United States for the last 30 years. The original economist, Adam Smith, described the invisible hand as enlightened self-interest and a market force that helps the demand and supply of goods in a free market to reach equilibrium automatically. So if you make a product and you charge too much for it, nobody will buy it. This is common sense 101. It's economics 101. Now, your competitor may sell a similar product and charge much less. So you would need to either lower your price to a point where you're competitive, or else you'll never sell anything and the market will punish you and you'll go out of business. So you don't need the government to interfere with this process, because the process itself sorts everything out. This is known as price discovery. The sellers and buyers come to an agreement that they consider to be fair. If the price offered for a product's too low, the seller simply won't sell. If the buyer is unable to find sellers, willing to take his offer, maybe his offer is just too low and needs to be raised in order to entice somebody to sell. This is why they call it an invisible hand, because it doesn't need anybody messing with it to make the market fair for people. Now, what crony capitalism does is it gives the invisible middle finger to the people. So when you manipulate either side of the equation, be it the demand side or the supply side, you end up with numbers that are invalid and warped. So as an example, if you go to like the meat department, you have a butcher or whatever that you go to get your meat, and he kept his thumb on the scale every time you bought meat from him, yeah, eventually you'd get fed up and go somewhere else, right? Of course, he realizes this, so either he does not do that to you or he tries to hide it. So when the government puts its big thumb on the scale, it doesn't care if you know it or not, because they're the only government game in town, so to speak. So they don't have an incentive to make you the best possible offer. In fact, sometimes their offers downright horrible, such is the case with many aspects of the American government. So you wind up with a thing called economic Darwinism. Now, most people think that Darwinism means that only the strong survive. That's what we've been taught. Only the strong. You got to be strong if you want to survive. And this again, that's actually not the underlying premise of that concept of Darwinism. It actually doesn't have anything to do with strength. Darwinism is that only those able to adapt will survive. So if the environment changes suddenly, those that recognize it quickly, figure out what to do about it, put their plan in place, they will be moving on to the next round on planet Earth. Anyone else that doesn't figure it out quick enough, you know, if you're unwilling or unable to accept this new paradigm, you might find yourself in an evolutionary dead end. And I think we're seeing this right now with the coronavirus situation. It's warped everything. It's screwed up the way we do everything, from going to the grocery store whenever we want, or, you know, to having to stand in line 6 feet apart from each person, or having to wear a mask. Somebody's going to figure out a way to profit from this. And I don't mean the pharmaceutical industry. I mean, like, you know, people are like, I'm going to get into the mask making business, or I'm going to get into the hand sanitizer business, or something like that. You know, there's a way to figure it out. If you're a restaurant, you can close and be stuck as a closed restaurant making no money. Or you can adapt. You can say, well, from now on, we're going to do just takeout and deliveries, and we're just going to focus on that till we get through this whole madness. And then it'll go back to some form of normal where we've got people eating in our restaurants, but we're still going to have a certain percentage of the people don't feel comfortable doing that. And therefore, we've had to change the way we do our business. We went from not offering takeout and not doing delivery and just being a restaurant where you come in and eat there. And because of this situation, you know, those able to adapt will survive. Those that can't figure it out or unwilling to figure it out or, you know, in denial about the changing landscape of things, they're fucked. And they will go out of business. They will be another empty store that couldn't figure it out. So, and there's examples of economic Darwinism throughout the business landscape. I mean, just because you dominated a generation doesn't assure you continued success in the future. Just, I mean, when was the last time you bought a roll of Kodak film? What, like, how's your favorite pager company doing these days? You know, want to come over and play Atari after school? Like, these companies are all done for the most part. The industries are done. Things change. So if the invisible hand balances things out, then economic Darwinism is like a fat kid on one side of the seesaw. You know, you can You could try as hard as you'd like to push your side down, but your skinny ass might want to think about swinging on the monkey bars. You know what I mean? It's just a tilted playing field that won't work. And when the government gets involved with marketplaces in order to prop up an aspect of the economy they feel is important to stimulate, it delays the natural transition to something better. Like if the current situation was working, usually a stimulation wouldn't be necessary. But the reasons for going the stimulus route might be, I mean, it might be something as simple as there's an election coming up, and it is believed that by injecting an artificial flow of money into a situation, that the voters may reward the incumbent politician by reelecting them. I mean, that happens a lot. It could be that a politician has a donor that already helped to finance their previous campaigns, you know, and expects some sort of legislation to benefit him in some way. That happens a whole lot of the time. I mean, it's basically the nature of Washington, D.C. Or, you know, maybe even the politician just sees himself in the, like, envisions himself in the future, taking some cushy job or being hired to, you know, give speeches in a particular industry that he's already assisted with massive amounts of government money. I mean, that's how it really gets done. That's why you see people like Julie Gerberding running the CDC and then leaving, you know, after approving all of these vaccines for a variety of companies that shouldn't have been approved, and then leaving the CDC and getting paid a boatload of money to go run Merck's vaccine division. You understand how that works? That's some bullshit, obviously. I think we can all agree that that can't happen. Not with these regulatory agencies. When you put a revolving door there and you start having people go between the public sector and the private sector and back and forth and back and forth, it creates big problems. We saw that with guys like Donald Rumsfeld. He's done that a lot. You know, he was in the Ford administration, I believe. And he then after he was done there, he went took a job with G.D. Searle and company. He was on he was chairman of Gilead pharmaceutical company. So they bring, as an example of that Rumsfeld situation. So aspartame, you remember aspartame, the artificial sweetener? Aspartame, they were trying to get it passed multiple times. The company that was doing it was trying to get it passed and they couldn't do it. But because it kept they're having these tests and it was giving all the lab rats tumors that were gigantic. I mean, it was killing half of them. It was really bad stuff. And they just couldn't get it approved. And they were doctoring their reports and they were really starting to piss off the FDA. The FDA was like, not only were they rejecting the aspartame applications, they were threatening to sue them because they were lying so bad in all of their testing and studies, and that they just kept telling them, like, you know, stop applying for this aspartame. We're never going to approve it. And we're about ready to call the, you know, to get the authorities involved with you guys because you're really starting to piss us off. So what happens after, like, you know, a half dozen times trying to get that push through, they couldn't do it. So they hired Donald Rumsfeld to come in and be their CEO, who knows jack shit about, you know, running a flavoring additive company, but it doesn't matter because he had massive government connections. And within a year, he got the FDA to approve that product. He put $11 million in his own pocket for doing that. And that's how shit gets done in Washington, D.C. And if you think that that stuff doesn't happen anymore, or that that's limited to like the 80s when everyone was crazy and, you know, no. I mean, it happens right now. It happened in Iraq and it happened in Afghanistan, you know, starting two unjust wars that destroyed large portions of these countries and then given billions of dollars in no big bid contracts to multinational engineering firms like Halliburton, you know, and who made the call on doing that? Dick Cheney. where was he before he was the vice president? Like right before he was the vice president, he was the CEO of Halliburton. Then he goes into the Bush administration as their vice president, by all accounts runs the wars, and gives no bid contracts to the company he just left. I mean, I don't need to explain how that's shady. And then Halliburton went on through their subsidiary KBR to build out all these bases and complexes for the troops. And over the course of their time in Afghanistan and Iraq, the showers that KBR built electrocuted and killed 17 different U.S. service members. 17! Just in the showers. They didn't get hit by bombs. They didn't get, you know, hit by an RPG while riding with Brian Williams in a helicopter. They didn't get shot at, you know, by, they didn't get killed by sniper fire while escorting Hillary Clinton. They died in showers that KBR built that were defective and got electrocuted. So you see, so it's part of this is like, this is bad for business when these companies are stealing all this money, but it's also dangerous. I mean, it incentivizes people to not give a shit about how well they do their job, because when you know the government's just going to keep handing you truckloads of money, airplanes filled with money to do a job, then are you really going to do the job to the best of your ability? I mean, you'd like to think so. You might like to think there might be some pride in that, or you'd like to think that, hey, at the very least, let's not kill a bunch of people with our showers. But they did. Now, the United States has been creating this crony capitalism paradigm over the last four decades, and nowhere has it been more prevalent than in the warfare economy, otherwise known as the military-industrial complex. And Smedley Butler talked about it, President Eisenhower warned about it, but clearly we weren't listening. But there's a well-thought-out trick that multinational conglomerates have been pulling off for a very long time now, and it's fairly simple. This is the scam. This is how it works. You have a large conglomerate that is interested in making a shit ton of money, so they diversify into many different industries through acquisition. They buy media companies, they invest in aerospace groups, they acquire controlling interest in missile manufacturers, they finance new construction and development projects. They get their hands in just about everything. Then they use the media arm that they own to sell the need for a war in some foreign country to the American people in particular, but really to the world in general. So while they're selling this through the media, they're pumping up this need for war in a foreign country. They're simultaneously making a ton of money from the advertisers looking to capitalize on the important stories in the run-up to war. You know, as a war is approaching, CNN and Fox and MSNBC and BBC and all these major media networks, their ratings spike because everyone's interested to see what's going to happen. Oh, are we going to go to war? When's it going to start? Or what's the new, you know, it makes sense. So they push for war through their media companies that they own. And by doing so, they create demand to watch those shows and then therefore make money on the advertising. So they're making money that way. Then they offer their aerospace company, you know, that they own, they offer their services to the military in case they need, you know, some more planes to, you know, some more planes to drop the bombs, which they also happen to manufacture in some of the other industries that they own, some of the other companies that they own. Then they promise to rebuild the destroyed countries with their real estate and development companies after when the war's over. So they make money on every angle. And the general public never notices that all these companies have the same ownership. Surely, pushing for a war through media channels they own, while simultaneously selling them the bombs to carry out the war, would be of some interest, one would think, you know, to the general public. Like, you might want to know that. But like, when General Electric, you know, people didn't know that General Electric owned NBC, and people think of General Electric as this light bulb manufacturing company, which is only one component of what they do. They also build, you know, they build guidance systems and bombs, and they're involved in all kinds of things in the military. So they've got their NBC networks pushing for war, war, war. And then they're also, you know, providing the services of bomb making that goes along with wars. And then they also have one of their subsidiaries being in charge of helping to rebuild the country, rebuild their electrical, you know, their electrical systems are going to need to be rebuilt, you know, after we bomb the shit out of them with drones and things like that. So they make money, you know, so people have talked about, oh, the banks love war because they make money. That's true. The banks do love wars because they make a lot of money. But these multinational conglomerates, they love war too, because they make a lot of money as well. It's a dirty, dirty business. You would think that we as Americans, those of us listening that are Americans, would want some explanation of this. We would want somebody to tell us that this is what's happening, because it should matter. But you know what? Not in America. I guess Americans don't want to get bogged down in the details. Just tell us who to hate and we'll take it from there. That's kind of the mentality. The late author Michael Rupert, also the star of a documentary called Collapse. He wrote, he's written many books, one called Crossing the Rubicon, which is fantastic. He once pointed out that if you're in a camp with a bunch of other campers and a bear attacks, you don't really need to be faster than the bear. You just need to be faster than the slowest camper. Crony capitalism is the government handing their favorite camper a large stick to bash another camper in the leg first before turning and running away from the bear. Sure, you will survive, but all the other campers will instantly hate you and distrust you with good reason. A politician, so as an example of something like this, a politician that's in charge of a massive budget, let's say to build 100 detention camps to warehouse illegal immigrants, as an example, because, you know, this happens. This politician is going to give some money, he's going to give money out to companies to build out these detention camps. He's going to give a ton of money to some company or companies. It is fair to say that the politician probably would love to take a tiny piece of that very large budget and put it in his pocket. But to do so, you know, might be a little too obvious. So what happens is that the money flows to his buddy's commercial real estate development company for them to build the facilities. Then once the politician retires from public office, he becomes the senior advisor to the CEO of that same development company and gets paid $3 million a year to advise the company while actually playing golf with clients. That's how the United States government works on a daily basis. And people talk about, oh, these politicians, they're all corrupt. They are corrupt. How do you explain how guys like Mitch McConnell go into politics 40 years earlier broke, and then are worth, you know, millions of dollars? Nancy Pelosi, wasn't rich when she got into politics. Yes, she's married a guy that's a real estate developer, but the real estate developer husband of hers has made a fortune from all the deals she's handed him. And I think it's important for people to realize that in 2013, Congress passed a law making it legal for them to insider trade on stock information and stock tips. You know how people were all up in arms that a bunch of the politicians sold all their stock right before the coronavirus situation came out? And they're like, this is terrible. They should be thrown in jail. They're not going to be thrown in jail. It's legal. They didn't do anything wrong. I mean, they did something wrong, but I mean, they didn't do anything illegal because they made it legal for themselves just a few years earlier. It's shitty. And they do it. And they have done it for a long, long time. They just made they took the unusual step of legalizing what they were doing in 2013. Kind of like when they passed the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012 that went into effect in 2013 as well, which made it legal for the government to conduct propaganda against the American people. So I see where the priorities are with the laws that they're passing. We got to make it legal for us to lie to people, and we got to make it legal for us to use insider information for our stock portfolio. Do you know why President Obama's paid $400,000 to speak at Cantor Fitzgerald? Because that's their way of paying him for the favorable decisions he made in the bond industry over the course of his presidency. I think it's also worth noting that the CEO of Cantor Fitzgerald, Howard Lutnick, is next door neighbors to Jeffrey Epstein and was for two decades. Just an aside, you know. Oh, he also went in and started a charity with Fergie, the Duchess of York. You know, a charity that specializes in kids. Interesting, isn't it? I'm sure it's just a coincidence. Ex-President Bill Clinton, the reprehensible reptilian cokehead rapist of a president, you know, Bill Clinton, was paid $750,000 to give one speech in Hong Kong to a Swedish telecom company called Ericsson that just so happened to end up on a watch list of the State Department because of their dealings with Iran. Now, after Bill collected his bribe, I mean speaking fee, his Luciferian psychopathic wife, Hillary Clinton, who just so happened to be the Secretary of State, excluded Ericsson from sanctions. But I'm sure that was all just a coincidence. I mean, even that big dummy George W. Bush still receives $175,000 to give speeches to companies and organizations, and he is barely capable of putting a sentence together. I mean, unless the audience gets to throw like rotten eggs at him, I would say that that is a colossal waste of money. But that's how you do bribery in the United States. That's it, man. That's how it's done. In other countries, they fill duffel bags with cash and hand it to you. But in America, they hire you for an imaginary job that you don't have to show up to. They pay you 100 times more than the going rate, then write off the cost as a business expense. Don't think for one second that bribing politicians is limited to some banana republics and failed states. You know, that those people that you voted for have enough integrity to exclude themselves from this kind of behavior. They don't. They don't give a flying fuck about you. They will take this money because this is the reason why they got into politics. They know how it works. They don't have a problem with this. They actually look forward to it. It's how business gets done in America. It's dirty, 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 but that's how it is. A lot of people have read the book Atlas Shrugged, written by Ayn Rand. She felt that true capitalism was the only morally valid socio-political system because it allowed people to act in their own self-interest if they chose to and reap the rewards. You know, if you want it bad enough, then go make it happen. If you don't, then get the hell out of the way or get run over. You know, she wasn't the warmest woman in the world. But if you had to boil down her philosophy to a sentence, it would be man's own self-interest and their individual rights are the most important tools for developing a great country. These, you know, so these things are enough of an incentive to push the country forward. If you don't care enough to look out for yourself, then why should society? You know, respect is earned, wealth is created. But what if a person was too fat or too stupid or too lazy to even act in their own self-interest because the government gave them everything that they needed? Then what happens? Well, according to Ayn Rand, what happens is a collapse of the modern world. What happens is you get the projects of a large, hollowed out city in America. Bunch of people standing around, not doing anything, waiting for the government check to arrive. There's no incentive to get an actual job. Not that you'd be able to be a viable candidate for it, because by doing so, you run the risk of no longer qualifying for the free money that you're currently receiving for doing absolutely nothing. So the question becomes, would you rather do nothing and get paid a little bit for it, or do something, lose out on the free money and get paid even less than before? So, you know, when people are incentivized to do nothing, they will do nothing to the best of their ability. The altruistic approach is giving a man a fish, whereas a capitalistic approach is teaching a man a fish, if you want to use that analogy. But the American way is to make the fisherman get a license from the state before he can go fishing. Then the state takes one fish for themselves. They give one of his fish to the guy taking a nap under a tree, and they leave one fish for the guy that actually caught it. That's, you know, that's the American way. The crony capital American way is to bribe the guy from the state to make fishing in the lake illegal to everyone else except his friends, then sell the fish to the other people for triple the original value. Let's go fishing somewhere else. This sucks. This method sucks. But this, unfortunately, is how America has become what it is. That's why you get Amazon paying no taxes, getting tax breaks to move their, you know, distribution hubs to different places in the country. You know, they did like the road show going from city to city saying, well, what, you know, we're thinking of maybe moving it here to Denver. We're thinking of maybe moving it to Tampa. We're thinking of maybe moving it to Long Island or wherever. What are the breaks you're getting? You know, tell us, what are you going to give us? You're going to give us all these tax breaks and payroll tax breaks and all this stuff. We're going to give you nothing and you'll like it, Spalding. You know, how about pay your fucking taxes, or don't? You know, I'm no fan of taxes, but I'm just saying that a small business would never get taken serious. They can never do anything like that. But once you become a multinational conglomerate, a behemoth with an army of lobbyists and an army of lawyers, then you just change reality to suit what you want. You just change political reality to make it work better for you. Why would you? I mean, I don't respect how they conduct business, but I understand why they do it. They just go like a bulldozer right through laws and regulations, and it's cheaper for them to just buy politicians to change things from the inside to make that sort of behavior legal, or at least non-prosecutable, and and have these people work for you. I mean, you could change the way you do business and miss out on all these tax breaks or anything, or you can just buy politicians through funneling money to lobbyists and super PACs and things like that, and then tell all these people like, hey, I'm going to give you a bunch of money, but this is what I want. I want you to change the regulations on this. I want you to change, I want you to open up these loopholes. I want you to close some of these other loopholes for my competitors so that they can't get this. And this is, I mean, I'm using Amazon as an example, but listen, this is what the Rockefeller industry did 140 years ago. They started, monopolizing industries and putting people out of, buying up competitors and putting them out of business, or buying politicians and getting them to do the dirty work for it. This is how it's worked for a long, long time. And it's funny that we talk about, oh, America's such a democracy and we have capitalism and all this stuff. Man, stop talking about that stuff. That's like talking about like, oh, we're the Yankees and we're so good because we have Babe Ruth. It's like that shit was 75 years ago. You're talking about it like it's happening now. You're talking about, capitalism and democracy and all this stuff like it's happening right now. It's not happening right now. This is stuff that our great grandparents lived through, not us. We don't have democracy. We don't have pure capitalism. We have some weird hybrid version of it where the tables get tilted for certain companies and certain industries and not for others. One of my favorite, I don't even know what I would describe her. Maybe I would call her an economist, but she's a little bit more than that, is Catherine Austin Fitz. She's just the best. And she used to work for a company called Dillon Reed and Company. They were a big Wall Street hedge fund. And she wrote a study called Dillon Reed and Company, Inc. and the Aristocracy of Prison Profits. And she described what she called the tapeworm economics and how the tapeworm game is played. So this is the game that they set up. Private investors arrange for new laws to be created with a little help from their politician buddies whose campaigns they've financed, right? They want these guys to help arrange for some new laws that benefit the industry in which they wish to invest in. So private investors want to create new laws for new industries that they wish to get into. They're not in them now, but they're thinking they want to get into them. So before they get into them, they want to go to some of the politicians that they're tight with and have those politicians create new laws in these industries that they're thinking of getting into. These new laws usually do not have society's best interest at heart. They're just their own financial goals. So then the investors, these private investors, partner up with powerful law firms that have a kind of revolving door that we just talked about that moves people between high governmental positions and their own boardroom of the law firms. Think of like Covington, which was where Eric Holder was a partner there. He becomes the attorney general, then comes back and back into the law firm. And there's a lot of guys at Covington like that. So this is perhaps. So the powerful politicians then arrange for large government contracts to be granted to the companies that have hired their old law firm to assist with the creation of a particular investment vehicle, like a fund that they're raising money for. Once these investments pay off, the companies use a portion of the profits to finance the campaigns of the politicians seeking re-election, and the tapeworm is fed. That's why she called it the tapeworm economics. So they get private investors with a ton of money They get politicians that they finance to create new laws. Then they use these powerful law firms that have a lot of these politicians that have come and gone through there. So they're in some form of rotation. They're either at the law firm or they're in government or they're on their way back or they're on their way leaving the law firm, going into the government, whatever. It's just a revolving door. So you've always got some people in the government and some people in this law firm. And then they have those politician buddies of them arrange for large government contracts to be granted to these companies, these new investor companies that the law firms help to create them. And then once these investments pay off, everybody takes a piece. Law firm gets theirs, politician gets theirs in the form of campaign finance. Or if they're done with their political career, they might go to work for these companies. So the blending of private companies with powerful government agents is the definition of fascism. And over time, it bleeds the economy to death because what it does is it destroys actual productivity in favor of the manipulation of numbers, inefficient production, and fake marketplaces. Like the best bid doesn't get the contract in this model. Only the most connected and powerful bid actually wins the business. So it creates this system where there's massive incompetence through crony capitalism and where negative behavior is positively reinforced, meaning you're mismanaging your company, but it doesn't matter because you're still getting all this money from the government. So you think you're doing a good job. So that's why I say negative behavior is positively reinforced. Negative behavior is you're shitty at running your business. How it's positively reinforced is I just keep making all this money. So you're like, I must be doing something right. Well, you are doing something right. You've got yourself a situation where you have the government working with you. So of course you're going to be rewarded for that. It's a shame too, because what should happen is that the best business should win the contract. The company that is best positioned to take that contract and either do it the right way or do it cheaper, do it quicker, whatever. Just, you know, a better version of it. But that doesn't happen. You get instead Halliburton being hired to build the showers in Iraq and Afghanistan and killing 17 people. You don't get the best shower manufacturing company. You get the most connected one. And if 17 soldiers need to die because of that, well, then that's just the price of doing shitty business. And they don't care. Now, nowhere is this feedback loop of corruption more obvious and prevalent than on Wall Street. And there is a well-worn path from lower Manhattan to Washington, D.C. This problem it's not limited to one political party or one investment bank. It is a fully encompassing problem, and it captures all the powerful players, not just in finance, but also in government. Nobody that is working in high finance or politics can ignore this mutually parasitic relationship, because there is just an insane amount of money involved. And this money is the blood that flows through the system and keeps this beast alive. It's all about money and power. But that flow of money is like blood. It just runs through the system. If that flow ever stops, everything dies. It's a philosophy that that can't be voted out of office, because this is beyond just like a few bad apples ruining it for the rest of those upstanding politicians. No. It's a fully captured system. It is a systemic problem that requires a brand new way of thinking, a complete overhaul of the current political system, because as long as politicians need money to finance their campaigns, there will always be someone willing to hand them a check in exchange for some favors. That's just how it works. But like anything, this current political system, it's all about control and money. Now, it might be controlled through access to money or controlled through the limitation of money. But, you know, it could be controlled through access to information or controlled through limitation on information, whatever. It could be controlled through access to dirt. That happens quite a bit, i.e. Jeffrey Epstein, Jimmy Savile, Craig Spence, DC Madam, all these people. There's two kinds of captured politicians: those that want to work with powerful business interests and those that have to. You do not rise to positions of power within the United States government without being controllable in some way. If you don't willingly get on board with the program, you will be forced to get on board through blackmail. Former Representative Dave Janda, Dr. Dave Janda, to be precise, once explained that the best advice that he ever got when he first entered politics at the national level was to stay away from the parties. And if you go, leave early, because when the first party ends, they lock the doors, pull the blinds shut, and then the real show begins. And that's where powerful people are recorded without their knowledge, you know, while they engage in some illegal behavior, from, you know, cheating on their wives, which isn't illegal, I guess, to drug use, to pedophilia. I mean, in some cases at the highest levels, we're even talking about ritual sacrifices. And I know that sounds crazy, and I know that sounds like bullshit, but that is 100% serious. And it happens. It's not some far-fetched plot from a Tom Clancy novel. It happens all the time in Washington. It's as serious as a heart attack. It's 100% real. And it's effective in order to control a person, not just until the end of their political career, but forever. And you can force a guy out of office if you've got the dirt on him. You know, it used to be you'd catch a guy who was cheating on his wife, right? You'd have that info on him. But, you know, there's an expiration date on that sort of stuff. You get divorced. You could catch a guy, I don't know, as an example, just pulling this out of my ass, Lindsey Graham, let's just say, closeted homosexual, right? You got him. You got the goods on him, like Israel does. They got Lindsey Graham by the balls, maybe literally. And you can extort him and say, we're going to out you. Well, shit, who doesn't know Lindsey Graham's a homosexual? Not that it matters, but I'm just saying. He is. But even that has an expiration date. At some point, you know, the cat's out of the bag and you're, you know, someone sees you on Santa Monica Boulevard in West Hollywood, booty shorts, you know, glow sticks, you know, tweaking out of your mind, you know, dancing at some gay pride parade. That's Lindsey Graham. Is he going to Ed Buck's house with Adam Schiff? Probably. You know, but even that, there's some expiration date. But with the pedophilia component, oh man, they've got you forever. You can't get away from that. Remember former Speaker of the House Dennis Hastert? That guy was extorted for millions of dollars over the course of his 40 years because he raped a bunch of kids when he was their wrestling coach. I mean, think about that. Think about what you, let's say you've got the goods on Dennis Hastert, and who at one point was like third in line to be the president. And this is not me speculating that he was a pedophile who was raping kids. He's in prison for it. Okay. So let's just remember that. Or he might be out by now. I don't think he did too much time. But he certainly should have. Now, what can you do with that? What can you do with that information? What can you do with a guy like Dennis Hastert? How many things do you think he was forced to do while in political office in order to keep that secret safe, which eventually came out anyway, so what, you know, it didn't do much good. What about former British Prime Minister Ted Heath? That people in the UK, like, they could not figure out why he gave away almost all of Britain's fishing rights to Europe in order to join the European Economic Community, EEC, which was later renamed. It was the precursor to the EU. Well, he was a notorious pedophile. He was being extorted for years by other governments across the world, and including parts of his own government, to be honest with you. So to protect his secret, he had no choice but to do what those with the goods on him wanted him to do. They had those trap houses set up all over the place. Dolphin Square in the UK. You know, you were busted. What about General Petraeus? What about Elliot Spitzer? What about Senator Larry Craig? I mean, the list goes on and on of people in positions of power being brought down through sexual scandals for not doing what they were instructed to do. That's why those guys aren't in power anymore. Not because they got busted cheating on their wives or, you know, tapping some dude's foot through a bathroom stall in the Minneapolis airport like Larry Craig with his wide stance. Get the fuck out of here with that. How dare you? What an insulting lie. Just say you're gay. Who cares, man? It doesn't matter. But those guys are all out of office, out of their positions of power, because they got busted through sexual scandals. Now, sexual scandals happen all the time. It's just that those three guys either were unwilling or unable to play ball, and therefore they got exposed, discarded, and the new batch comes in. So are these some of these crazy stories starting to make sense now that you've seen? Is it becoming clear that this is a tool that's used all the time? I mean, are you starting to think about these public scandals in a new way now? When one of these guys gets caught, everyone's initial line of thinking is, oh my God, I can't believe these guys are such dirtbags. Well, listen, they're all dirtbags. That's why they're in office. They've got to have the dirt. They've got to be controllable. And this is how it works. When you stop being controllable, they out you. You get the Dennis Hastert treatment, or the Elliot Spitzer, or the Petraeus, or the Larry Craig. You get thrown out there. Have fun. You know, we're giving you one last chance to play ball, or we're going to sick the media on you, and they are going to have field day with you, Elliot. Oh, you like to keep your black socks on while you're fucking strippers? Great. Guess who's going to know about this? You know, besides your wife and kids. Everybody. Good luck with your legal career after that. This is what happens. Now, a company. Now, just take this philosophy for politics and transfer it onto companies. You think companies don't do this as well? Big Pharma has their own private investigators. And by some accounts, I can't confirm this, but I certainly have heard it from multiple sources, their own hit teams. I know it sounds nuts. But a company that is, say, making a play for a lucrative contract with a government, they might secretly arrange for money to find its way to a politician making the decision on their favor. Or they might also purchase some incriminating video evidence featuring that same politician from a person running a brownstone operation like Jeffrey Epstein was. You know, you got these guys on video in the Lolita Express or on Little St. James, Orgy Island. You got video of Bill Gates doing something he shouldn't do. That's worth something. That's worth something, not just to some scumbag like Jeffrey Epstein. But you see, he could sell that to other companies. He could sell that to Oracle. He could sell that to IBM. He could sell that to Apple. Hey, you want the goods on Bill Gates? You know, this happens. Not every high-ranking politician is a pedophile, but everyone is controlled to some degree. You don't get to that level without being compromised. So since a crony is defined as a close friend or companion, the blackmail component is not really crony capitalism in the traditional sense, but instead it's a hybrid version. It's where one person is forced into this relationship. So I think a better name for it is shotgun capitalism, like a shotgun wedding, right? We're going to force you into this. Doesn't have to be this way. We don't have to live in this world, you know? Things can be different. I mean, in terms of how we get involved with changing the world or understanding of this political marriage to big business, it's fundamental that we see that money is the root of this problem. And we can make decisions with our own money to remove it from this form of business, leaving big banks in favor of local credit unions is a great start. Refusing to purchase products and services from companies that are involved with shady dealings on Wall Street, or like harsh product testing on animals, or polluting the environment, or whatever. If you dig hard enough, some of your favorite companies are going to be guilty of these things, and you may choose to show your disapproval for that by removing your money or removing your eyeballs from it, or your attention, your energy, whatever, from these companies and putting it with somebody else. It requires you doing a little bit of work, a little bit of research to see who are the bad guys, who are the good. I mean, it's obvious with companies like Monsanto and Google and people like that. I mean, you know their reputation. But I mean, I'm talking about like digging into like your favorite types of food that you eat, you know, the food brands that and you go, "Oh, I really like this company. It's healthy." And then you trace it all the way back and you realize Pepsi owns it. And you're like, "Shit." So we have the option to withhold our attention, our influence, our money, our emotional energy from those people or those things that simply have not earned it. And maybe one individual's boycott won't make a dent, you know, in the quarterly earnings of these companies, but a large enough collection of individuals will be noticed. And since money is all they really, really care about, then the removal of money from their business will surely get their attention at some point. If you like this podcast, do me a favor, rate it, give it a high star rating and write a little review about it. It matters to the algorithm. It doesn't really matter to me. I appreciate it, of course, but it matters to the algorithms, and those fuckers are messing with our numbers in the alternative media anyway. So I have no problem in telling people that, hey, we can play that game too. So share it to as many people as you can. I do appreciate that. And connect with me through the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. And I certainly do appreciate you guys taking your time to listen to this podcast. Thanks a lot. I'll talk to you soon.